Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1222, we present two stories from New Life Rattle writer Michael Zingala. Tonight's writer, Michael Zingala, was born in 1991 in Oakville, Ontario, to Polish parents. He has lived in Oakville his entire life. Michael is currently in his final year of undergraduate study at university, taking biology and chemistry, and hopes to one day make it to medical school. Apart from writing, Michael enjoys drawing, soccer, tennis and golf, and spending time with his 19 and 4-year-old sisters and his friends. The stories you will hear tonight and next Sunday are deceptively simple. Michael skillfully notes details and observations of people and landscapes that reveal a lot more is going on than it may first appear. Tonight's first story takes us to a river in Poland. Michael and his cousin beg his aunt to take them swimming on a scorching summer day as a storm looms. Let's listen now as Michael Zingala reads the story Wisła River, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Wisła River, by Michael Zingala. I throw the rainbow crocheted hacky sack to my cousin Karol as we walk along the dirt road back to our farm in Kobylnica, Poland, about 80 kilometers from Warsaw. The scorching summer sun beams down on our 9-year-old necks. I run my dirty fingers along the rusty fence by the side of the road. We turn onto our property. Leaves from a peach tree that overhang the fence brush my hair. Karol runs. "First one to the door wins," he yells. I chase after him. Grapevines shade me from the sun, and the smell of freshly baled hay fills my nostrils as I sprint to the door. I arrive and see Karol panting in front of Ciocia Ania, which means Aunt Ania. She smears sunscreen on her wide nose and rough cheeks. "Can we please go to the river today? Please," Karol says. "You promised you would take us." Ciocia Ania looks around. Her red hair glistens in the sunlight. She points off into the distance and says, "I don't like the sight of those clouds over there." "But that's so far away, Ciocia. By the time it gets here, we'll be home already." "Please," Karol replies. He folds his hands under his chin. I stand silent, not caring about the outcome of this talk. She crosses her arms, sighs, and says, "Okay, we can go. Only for a little while, though. Get your things ready." Ciocia Ania goes inside to grab her book and reading glasses. Karol and I already have our swim trunks on. Karol tosses me the hacky sack, runs into the beat-down barn beside our house, and comes out with a corroded spade. I throw Karol the hacky sack, and he bats it with the spade. The foot bag flies and lands beside the gray-bricked well, a few meters in front of the wooden front door. Mom opens the door. "Have fun, guys. Don't hurt yourselves." Ciocia Ania sidesteps my mom on the way out of the house. "I've got my eye on them. Don't you worry, Basha," she says. Mom waves and closes the door. We head for the road. The Wisła River is about a kilometer away from the farm. Karol and I march ahead of Ciocia. Our flip-flops slap our dry heels with each step. Ciocia Ania carries a picnic basket filled with sandwiches, apples, and water. We walk through a field of strawberries, and Karol and I pick the reddest ones we find. Karol eats them with the sepals intact. I don't. The strawberry field leads us to a pine forest. Once in the shade, we take a short break for Ciocia Ania. The forest floor crackles as we march through it. I find a long, crooked stick and pretend it's a sword. Karol uses the spade. we battle. Stop fighting before one of you gets hurt, Judge says. I throw my stick as we walk out of the shaded forest into open terrain. We see a steep hill in the distance. I run. First one to the top wins, I say. Carl meets me at the top of the hill and chucks the spade on the grass. We plop down under an oak tree, and its jagged bark presses into our backs. Oak leaves rustle above our heads, and blades of grass sway around our feet, and Carl and I play rock, paper, scissors. Chucha Anya wheezes up the hill and stops and has a drink of water. She wipes her forehead with the back of her hand and gazes ahead. Another 5 minutes, kids. I can see the river from here. We just need to cross a stream and pass through another forest, and we're there. I take a green apple out of the picnic basket and sink my teeth into it. We descend the backside of the hill. The ground is wetter and the grass is longer on this side. It becomes tougher to pull our flip-flops out of the muddy earth the closer we get to the river. We cross the calm, shallow stream and navigate through a dense array of oaks, pines, and birches. We're almost there, kids, Chacha says. Carl pushes through the last bush and holds the branches for Chacha Anya to pass. He lets go of the branches as I pass halfway through the bush and runs to the sand. The branches graze my stomach. I stand and stare at the calm yet fast-moving river. A white stork glides gracefully along the surface of the water. I gaze across the river and see nothing but farmland and red-roofed barns. Beautiful, isn't it? Says Chacha Anya. Wow, I say. I run after Carl, who uses a spade to dig a hole in the compact sand. Beside us, a dad watches his two kids toss a tennis ball back and forth. Their golden retriever waits patiently for one of them to drop the ball. Chacha sits down behind us and opens the pages of her Polish romance. I pause from digging to watch the now wavy river. A bolt of lightning stabs the water in the distance. Whoa, did you see that? I say to Kato. I think we better start heading back, kids, Chacha Anya says. She puts her book in the picnic basket. The dad grabs his backpack and follows his kids and the dog to the forest. Carl lifts his head, examines the incoming storm clouds, and says, Just give us 5 more minutes, Chacha. I want this hole to be big enough to sit in so that only my head sticks out. The sunlight disappears and a raindrop lands on my head. Another one soon follows. Followed by another, and another. I stand up and brush grains of sand off of my butt. Let's go, Carl. We'll come back tomorrow, I say. Carl leans on the spade and rises to his feet. A sheet of rain blindsides us, and we scurry back to the forest. I have never seen Chacha run so fast. My shirt sticks to my chest as we dart out of the forest. We stop at the now raging stream. The deafening downpour blurs our vision. Crossing now is too dangerous. Let's take cover under a tree and wait for the storm to pass, shouts Chacha. We plant our shivering bodies under an oak. Blinding bursts of light illuminate the sky. Crackling explosions follow every burst. Carl buries the metal head of the spade deep into the earth. One steamboat, two steamboat, bang! I count to myself the seconds between a bolt of lightning and the sound of thunder. One steam, bang! I look over at Chacha and notice her trembling fingers holding a chestnut-beaded rosary. I think of my mom back at the farm. My eyes well. I turn my head to Carl, who admires the downpour. I hope we don't die here, I say. Who cares if we do? Carl replies. 15 minutes pass. The downpour stays strong, but the time between blasts of lightning has increased. Worried about getting sick from the chilly wind, we decide to cross the stream. Carol and I jet through the icy water, Chocha right behind us. The spade stays by the oak. We sprint towards the steep hill. Our flip-flops sink into the mire that covers the earth. Halfway to the hill, Chocha's sandal lodges in the mud and falls off. Carol and I stop. Chocha pulls a water bottle out of the picnic basket, cleans her sandal, and slips it on. We run. Lightning and thunder chase us over the hill, across the open terrain, through the pine forest, and across the strawberry field. The downpour turns into a drizzle. We cross the flooded road and run onto our property, where Chocha's husband and Carol's dad, my two uncles, greet us. Mom sees us through the house window, darts outside, and hugs us all. Carol describes our adventure to everyone. I spot the hacky sack lying by the well and go to pick it up. "Oh, and guess what, Chocha?" Carol says to my mom. "Mihao was so scared when we were under the tree that he even started crying." "I wasn't crying. You were crying," I say. I throw the hacky sack to Carol and we play.
That was Michael Zangala reading his story, Vistula River. Tonight's second story is about a group of grade 8 students making personal shields in class that will cover the walls of the school gym for their graduation ceremonies. Let's listen now as Michael Zangala reads his story, The Shield.
The Shield by Michael Zangala. The clock above the chalkboard shows 12:15 p.m. Our English teacher, Mrs. Choma, struts into the noisy classroom holding a cup of coffee. Her chestnut brown hair, hazel eyes, and loving smile warm the room. "Okay, class, everyone back to their seats. Take out your personal shields. As promised, you will have until the end of class today to work on them," she says. Mrs. Choma relaxes into her swivel chair, opens up the latest edition of Reader's Digest, and sips her coffee. I put my lunch bag into my backpack and take out my personal shield. My best friend, Steve, sits to my right, followed by Richard. Dave sits to my left. We are the only boys in a class of 27 at St. Marguerite Duville Catholic Elementary School. We are in French immersion. Our personal shields split into four quadrants. The top left represents our confirmation saint, the top right our zodiac sign, the bottom left our interests, and the bottom right our nationality. Our shields will cover the walls of the gym during our graduation ceremony next month. I am done drawing the border and the two left quadrants of my shield. In my interests quadrant, I have drawn a gray boombox, a blue Nike swoosh symbol, a brown cross, and a Houston Rockets jersey with the name of my favorite basketball player on the back, Tracy McGrady. Footballs, basketballs, baseballs, and bowling balls make up the background. I glance over at Steve's shield. The background of his interests quadrant is the National Basketball Association logo. Blue on the left, red on the right, and a white silhouette of a basketball player in the middle. "You should give the silhouette a unibrow in a Hitler mustache," Richard says. Steve snorts and says, "No way, man. I'll give your St. Vincent a unibrow in a sec, though." I turn to Dave, who lightly sketches a Chinese flag in the bottom right quadrant. His plastic pencil case sits neatly atop the right corner of his desk, as always. Dave is the quiet one of us guys. An only child, he gets good grades, draws well, and plays the violin. Steve and Richard tease Dave. They often call him Chink, Needle Dick, or Glasses. Dave laughs when they joke about him. I notice Dave's interest quadrant is finished. Wow, Dave, you finished your interests box? Let's have a look at it. Yeah, I did last night, Dave replies. He turns his shield towards me. The Major League Baseball logo makes up the background. Blue on the left, red on the right, and a white silhouette of a baseball player in the middle. Holy smokes, that's awesome, I say. That MLB logo looks incredible. Mr. Caterini appears at our door. He knocks on the door frame and motions for Mrs. Choma to follow him. She puts down her magazine and coffee, rises from her chair, and walks out of the classroom. Steve turns his head towards Dave. What you got there, Davy boy? He says. Steve rises from his seat, hovers over Dave's shoulder, and gazes at his shield. His mouth shrivels and his nostrils flare. You copied my idea. I called using a pro sport team's logo as my background and you copied it. What the fuck, faggot? Dave, looking down at his shield, mumbles, I didn't copy your idea. Of course you did. You heard me call it yesterday. Couldn't come up with any better ideas, eh, Ching Chong? Steve replies. Dave continues to look at his shield. I didn't copy your idea. Steve walks to his seat and mutters, What a homo. Fucking chink can't think of any better ideas. Dave lifts his head and sprouts from his seat. I didn't copy your idea, you fucking racist, he yells. Steve turns around. Yeah, you did, Wing Wong. Erase it before I do it for you. Racist bitch! Dave charges Steve. They wrestle and exchange fists to the ribs. Veins bulge out on their foreheads. The class watches in silence. Steve grabs Dave by his shirt and thrusts him over Dave's desk. Dave and his pencil case smack the floor. Nobody moves. Dave, with his head down, lies frozen on the dirty classroom floor. Steve pants over Dave's desk, and a bead of sweat falls from his forehead onto the white silhouette of the baseball player drawn on Dave's shield. Seconds pass, and Steve returns to his seat. Dave pulls himself to his knees, adjusts his glasses, collects his pencils, pens, eraser, ruler, and calculator, puts them in his pencil case, stands up, hobbles to the other side of his desk, and sits down. Class resumes. The clock shows 12:37 p.m. when Mrs. Choma struts back into the classroom. Dave raises his hand. Mrs. Choma, may I go work on my shield in the hallway? I can't focus here, Dave says. Of course you can, Dave. I will call you back when it is time to pack up, she replies. She eases into her chair and picks up her Reader's Digest magazine. Dave grabs his pencil case and shield and walks out the door. For the next minute, I stare blankly at the floor in front of me. I raise my hand. Mrs. Choma, may I also go work outside on my shield? I say. Steve peers over at me. Sure thing, Michael. Someone needs to keep Dave company out there. Mrs. Choma smiles. I grab my pencil case and shield and walk out the door. Dave sits by the elevator and works on his Chinese flag. I plop down beside him. Dave glances at me out of the corner of his eye, but says nothing. I put my head down and work.
That was Michael Zangalla reading his story, The Shield. That concludes Life Rattle number 1222. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Michael reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Ernie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Sunday night at 9 to hear three new stories written and read by Michael Zangalla.